What is up, guys? We're going to do this podcast. My name is Salman Ali, at Salman Ali NBA on Twitter. Here joined by the great Jonathan Fagan of the Houston Chronicle. Jonathan, how are you doing?
I'm great. Thank you. How are you?
Doing okay. So you wrote an awesome column for the Chronicle yesterday on Rockets free agency, and I want to talk about it with you. But first, let's start here, because the NBA lottery was 2 weeks ago, and this was purported to be one of the all-time lotteries because of how good the top prize was in Victor Wembanyama, and to some extent how good the two consolation prizes were in Scoot Henderson and Brandon Miller. We all know that the Rockets had as good a chance as anybody in the top three. That obviously didn't happen, right? They landed fourth. You wrote an article about how close they actually got in to winning the winning combo in the room. How did they feel about that in the moment? And has that evolved over time?
That's a great question. That second part of it. They didn't feel that bad. They felt okay about being four. They thought the gap between, which I think a lot of people would, the gap between one and two was far more significant than the gap between two and four. And if you're getting that next group, it's better to have your choice. I was with Rafael Stone and Ime Udoka almost as soon as they found out, and they weren't that down. They weren't like, and I told them how close they came, because obviously I was in the room, and we were following the numbers, and the Rockets had the first three numbers, and the fourth number was one digit off from them winning for Wembanyama, and I told them, and they're like, they would have liked Wembanyama. No one would pretend otherwise. And, if you look at it, I know we'll probably talk about other things more, but most people would say the guy with the most upside in this draft, if everything goes best, the highest ceiling in the draft language, other than Wembanyama, will not go in the first three picks. And so they could draft him.
Yeah.
Amen Thompson, it's much greater variance of what he can be. Where Brandon Miller, you feel pretty good at what he's going to be. You feel it's going to work out with him. But you don't feel that way with Amen Thompson as much, because the shot, the mechanics are bad. It's not just that it doesn't go in, which, by the way, Scoot Henderson's shot, at least his three-point shot, this isn't going either.
That actually makes me feel better, though, because if the mechanics were good and it wasn't going in, that's an issue. But, if you have to start everything from scratch, great. I like that.
You're a half-full kind of guy.
Yeah.
I did a story about the Thompson twins, but more so about Amen, with his coach at Overtime Elite and with Damian Wilkins, who is the general manager of Overtime Elite. I did a story with them. And first of all, they rave about those two guys. And, I forget the exact way he put it, but he said, God reached down and touched them. And that's raves. And I asked, how would he be if he was at the Wilkins family picnic, the family reunion, his athleticism compared to a family with Gerald Wilkins, Damian Wilkins, and most of all, Dominique Wilkins. Yeah. And he said he'd stand out. He's up there with Dominique. His athleticism is right there with Dominique's, at least. But I asked, okay, he's been in your program for 2 years. You've said how incredibly hard he works. Four-day workouts. He said, we have two-a-days. Those guys did four-a-days. Yeah, well, if their shot is still lousy, how is it going to get good? And he pointed out guys who needed more time, and that's fair. There are guys who arrived at the NBA with broken shots or just bad shots who improved. But it's a huge question. It's the reason those guys will not go in the top three. But to get back to your question, it's why the Rockets felt okay with being four. Not anything like they would have felt over one. They would have been celebrating and still would be, but they didn't feel that bad about the difference between who they'd get at two and three and who they could take at four.
Yeah. I want to get back to those possible options at four, but I kind of feel like if they were ever going to trade a top five draft pick, and I'm not saying that they will, But if they were ever going to do it, this feels like the most logical of the last 3 years that they would do it. There's obviously a lot of uncertainty at 2 and 3 of this draft, and there may be some opportunity to move up and take someone like Scoot Henderson, or maybe Houston is of the mind that Amon Thompson is not that much better than someone like Asur Thompson or Cam Whitmore, and they could trade down and get more draft capital from one of these other teams that way. Now, like, all that being said, I would say that there's like a 65% likelihood that they just keep their pick because it might be too expensive to trade up, and trading down options aren't that appetizing. But if I were to ask you to put like a number on it, how likely do you think that the Rockets are just stay at number 4 and take their pick?
I think a little bit more likely than the 65 you said, because it's hard to make those kinds of deals. That's why they don't happen that often. And the trade the pick entirely thing, you know, which is certainly, as you said, more viable now than the past few years. It's for star, right? The next guy who wants out of where he is. Well, you can do that in other ways when you've got max room cap space. And so that limits, okay, do you have to give up the 4th pick of the draft to do it? And if a guy's forcing his way out, well, I mean, so it depends who it would be. And that's what makes it so incredibly unpredictable. I mean, first of all, Kevin Durant is at least 2 years away from the next time he wants to get out of wherever he would be at the time. So, you know, you start to lose, who's it going to be? Who's going to be the superstar guy that you put together the giant deal? You know, Donovan Mitchell last year, Rudy Gobert last year, Kevin Durant during the year, James Harden part one, James Harden part two. You know, who's the next one who's going to force his way out? And I can't predict that, but that would be a reason to move the number 4 pick. And hadn't happened yet. And so, you know, how's a guy going to get disgruntled in late June to where he wants to move?
Yeah, never happened before, I would say. But let's talk about the options at number 4. Let's just assume what's likely going to happen, that they just keep the pick. So I wrote about it this week. I know there are a lot of people saying, well, there are like really like 5 players you can take here. And I guess you could say... you could take Amen here, you could take Asur here, you could take Cam Whitmore here, you could take Anthony Black here, et cetera, et cetera. But I really feel like there's only 2 logical options here. 1, Brandon Miller if he falls to you. And 2, Amon Thompson. And I suppose you could make a case for Asur or Whitmore. I just think Amon is enough of a better athlete and playmaker than those two to make a difference. And I will say this, that those two other guys are terrific athletes. Like, Whitmore is, like, underratedly athletic. But I say that to say this, I kind of think this should be the case of whoever falls to you, like Amon or Brandon. So my question to you is kind of a 2-parter. What do you personally think of Houston's options at 4? And obviously it's not fair to ask you, you know, who they ultimately is going to pick, but do you have a sense
of what? Sure? It's not unfair, but I don't know the answer.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's kind of why I thought it was unfair. do you have a sense of like who they like and what qualities they're looking for in a number 4 pick?
They're totally, as they have always said they are, but they are best player. But when I do a mock draft, and I'm not saying it's the right way because it's not like, oh, you've nailed it every year, that mock draft. But I don't look at the team's needs, and I've asked quite a few general managers or other front office types over the years, when they say best player available, it really is true. It's not just a line. The only way that they don't is often if they don't see a path for a guy to get on the court. So if you're a team with Jokic, are you taking a center? And if you had a high pick and there's a guy you like just as much as the center, okay. Then maybe you don't look at a need so much, but you look at a roadblock. Well, the Rockets aren't loaded up with roadblocks. Maybe if you have a 2 who can only play 2, you know, then you'd say, you know, I don't want a Josh Christopher, the guy, to where we draft him and he can't get on the court because we drafted a guy at the same position. So other than that, I almost completely ignore fit or need or any of that. But I do look at a general manager's history. So if it's Orlando and there's a guy who's extra long-limbed, tall guy for his position, you know, that's Hammond's history, going back to Giannis. And he's still Mo Bamba, Jonathan Isaac, and all these guys. That's the way he drafts. And if there's a guy like that, I think he'll lead. With Rudy, when in doubt, he's taking the shooter. And I told him that, and he laughed and said, no, I don't. Oh, yeah, I guess I do. He did. When in doubt, he would take a shooter. Rockets so far under Rafael Stone have taken highest ceiling. That's what they've looked at. Like Josh Christopher, for example, later in the first round, 24, if everything went right, he had a lot higher ceiling than a guy taken at 24. Now, there were ways he wasn't a sure thing, as if you had one sure skill. That, yeah, you know what? He might not be great at everything, but he's got that. Nah, he's taking highest ceiling. Jalen Green, he wanted Jalen Green. He was fired up about Jalen Green, and he didn't take Mobley. Because Jalen, as we've all seen, Jalen Green's ceiling is still very, very high. I think that's Rafael Stone's way of doing it, doing the draft. I don't know a reason why that would change. So that's why I keep putting Amen Thompson there. And by the way, it's Amen. Not amen. I've been corrected once or twice. And so that's why I keep putting Amen Thompson in there.
Makes sense. By the way, just as a quick sidebar, has he changed at all? And like, I mean, obviously he wouldn't tell you, I don't think. But do you think they, if they were to go back to 2021, do you think they still take Jalen?
Like if you had a time machine, you go back, but yeah. You know what you know now. I don't know. I haven't gotten into that with him, but he does love him some Jalen.
Yeah, I like Jalen too. I kind of feel like the conversation around him gets muddled because of where he was taken, right? Like if Jalen was the fifth overall pick in that draft, and we were to discuss him as the fifth overall pick, Would it not be like an entirely different conversation? Like, wouldn't we be much more excited about Jalen? Like, if
there's that,
yeah,
there's that. And what I thought you were about to say is, and people who just don't know better, like you hardly ever hear anybody nationally talk about, and the guy works. He wants to work. He wants to be coached, and he wants to be coached hard. There was some meme running around the time they hired Udoka about Jalen Green pushing back and fighting it. No. He's the opposite of that. He's the guy who liked having John Lucas in his face all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, that. So, I mean, that's one of the reasons I couldn't answer your question, what would Rafael say? Because he likes what he sees that we've seen. You know, he wants to be coached. He works really, really hard. And,
yeah.
You know, anybody can tell. He jumps high, he runs fast. He's got, you know, some real physical tools. But, you know, you have those kind of physical tools and you work really hard and you're open to coaching. That gives him a chance to reach towards that ceiling.
No, he is a, I don't know what other way to describe it, than he's like a bad motherfucker. Like if you hear the stories of his workouts with these teams before the draft, like it definitely had Detroit take a step back and think about it at number one. Like, I don't think that was fake. I think they were actually thinking about it. I think they were leaning Cade Cunningham the whole time, but I definitely do believe the reporting that they were thinking about it because of how Jalen performed in that workout. So let's talk about the other picks that they have in this draft. So 20, I kind of feel like, especially when you consider that the Rockets have made a trade every single year that Rafael has been general manager at the draft, I kind of feel like this is. I don't think they're going to pick 20 at 20. I don't know what the trade is yet. I think maybe they trade out to the future. Maybe they trade out for another piece. I don't think they're going to take this player. Part of it is like, I don't think there's roster spots or playing time for that player that they would take. Like, it doesn't seem feasible to add another young talent to this roster anymore.
Those are all solid ways to look at it. I think they could. I mean, last year they traded back and would have traded back again, but couldn't get the deal. They would have tried to get Ty Washington early second if they had a deal to do that. And they moved out, got another asset, and still got the guy. I think they would do that again. The problem with doing that is, well, not really the problem, but the problem with predicting that, if the kind of guy they've wanted the last few drafts that they could not get, if there is that guy, and what that guy is a shooter. If you have a guy who's a potentially elite three-point shooter, or real, they tried each of the last 2 years to get the pick, to take the shooter they wanted and didn't get it. So if that kind of guy slips, or to your theory, if they can move up a few spots somehow and get what they really want, yeah, I could see that happening. But if he gets all the way to 20, I don't know who that would be. You know, there's so many guards in that middle of the first round.
Yeah.
And old wings, some of them are threes. But I wouldn't describe them as Trey Murphy. You know, I don't see that really getting, and if there was, I don't see he's getting to 20. But if that kind of scenario existed, or if they think one of the guys that maybe isn't viewed that way, I don't know that they would take a reach to a guy who, you know, is a late first round. But he can shoot. Maybe they would. I think that's going to happen a lot more this year. Maybe with some of the, like, the Nets have multiple picks. So I think some people might go earlier, like Ben Shepherd or somebody, than you would expect. But I don't know about 20. But yeah, no, I think you have a good point that, unless the first 19 picks go just the way they want, there's a good chance they move one way or another.
Yeah. And even if they don't trade out, I think they might trade out of other drafts, because like it just makes sense to package some of these picks together to get maybe a better asset, maybe just a way to like not prevent yourself from getting even more of a roster crunch than you already have. Because especially if you're going out in free agency and you're adding guys, like, I don't know who's going to play, you know, like, is everybody going to be in the G League? Do they want everybody to be in the G League? I don't know. I suspect.
Well, they're going to move young guys out. They're not going to be here to play. I mean, that's the thing. They have so many guys under contract. If you add 3 or 4 free agents, which is a possibility, I had somebody even call it 3.5. 3.5? Well, 3 with bigger contracts, 1 with a little one. You have that many. Well, you don't have that many roster spots, never mind rotation spots. So there could be some guys being moved. They have to do it for the reasons you said. And that's why I always thought drafting 7 guys in the first round in a 2-year period, it's a good way to maybe hedge your bet, but it kind of makes it hard to develop everybody, especially when you take 2 at the same position each time. So, in other words, you take Jalen and Josh Christopher, and then you take Usman Garuba, but you already took Alperen Şengün. So, okay, how are they all going to play enough time to develop?
Yeah, so. And especially if you hit on some of your guys that you're just, you know, like Kevin Porter Jr. and KJ Martin, if you hit on the guys that you're not even spending first-round picks on, then it gets even harder to find playing time for those first-rounders. Like, Ty Washington, I don't know when that guy's going to play next year. And I think he was actually quite good at the moments he played last year. It might be a case of like he might just play exactly how much he played last year, because I don't see any way he plays more. And it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. But there are some really talented players here in this range that could fall. A guy like Brandon Podmise, I can't pronounce his name.
But if he falls in Chicago, he looked really good in Chicago. There's a few guys who moved up. What if Derek Lively falls all the way? You know, my first mock draft, I put him all the way at 20. I moved him way up after that. And it's so unpredictable. These mock drafts, you can't go too much by them, you know, unfortunately. And everybody, you know, it's very hard to work through the lies and, you know, posturing. And every single player's stock is moving way, way up according to the agents. So, and that's where a lot of stuff comes out from. It's from agents.
Yeah.
So, and, there is some reporting that is influenced heavily by agents. So.
No, you don't say. You're saying these guys influence the reporters on the ground? I wouldn't have thought, Jonathan. I would not have thought.
Sorry.
Okay. So you wrote a column yesterday on the Rockets free agency, and you kind of outlined the different ways they could spend the $60 million that they're going to have this summer. One was obviously by signing James Harden. That's the one that we're going to talk a lot about today. Two was signing multiple high-end role players. Three was by trading for a star, and four, I believe, was by standing pat, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. We don't need to spend too much time on the number four.
No, we don't. We don't.
Trust the process.
Right. And like you listed out like the pros and cons for each, but let's start with Harden. Even though I know people are tired of hearing about it. Today we're hearing some conflicting reporting about like Houston's interest in James Harden. Not that it doesn't exist, but how far it goes and to what extent they would be willing to go to make it happen. I guess that's a good place to start. In your estimation, Jonathan, what is Houston's actual interest level in making such a reunion happen?
Well, I've always felt it was ambivalent. You know, I've thought that since Christmas time. And because, and I've had so many people around the league say to me, it doesn't make a lot of sense. It doesn't make sense for them or him. A 34-year-old guy who's shown some signs of decline. He's got a lot left, but obviously not at the height of his powers anymore, on a team with 22, 23-year-olds. Well, really, only one 23-year-old. Everyone's younger than that. How does that make sense? You know, when he is good enough to be the point guard and best player on a contender, they're not good enough to contend. When they're good enough to contend, he's not. So if you're trying to build a champion, as they always said through the process of the last few years. We're doing this to build a champion. We're going to, and the Rockets did not shortcut it. They did not acquire veterans, which they so desperately needed to play better, because they were determined, we want to collect draft capital, we want to collect young talent, and we want to collect cap space. And they did. And they did it in the name of not building a better team, but building a championship contending team. How does a 34-year-old make that happen? There is one way, I would say, is obviously, I did put this in the story. I also don't think they can resist. If they can get him without doing too much damage to the future planning, how can you resist after what you've been through these last few years? You immediately a whole lot better. You're immediately better than one person should be able to make you because of how much they need what he does. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if they can resist it. But the other reason is because what if, okay, by getting much better for the first year or two, you look like a team on the rise. This is a team that's coming now. Then you go out and you're trying to get players as a team that's going to be something that maybe people aren't ready to take the leap of faith off a 22-win season. You start to win, even if it's 37 games. And one player making 15-game difference is ridiculous. That doesn't happen. But if you're a 37 to 42-win team, now you go out and you can get players. And I put this in the story, if they get him, he's not the only one. When you got $60 million, you can get another guy. And now that other guy is joining a team with James Harden. And they probably have ways to work things to get a third, too. So, like I put in the story, there's so many plus and minuses. I know that they have been considering those pros and cons for months. It's not as it's been depicted nationally as can the Rockets get him, or not solely about can the Rockets get him, and it's totally his decision. It's their decision, too. And it's also a little bit like, you know, a date to the prom, where you find out what the answer is going to be, and then you ask. You know, you don't. And so maybe that's a little of the positioning of the what I called ambivalence.
All right.
You know, that anything that I'm saying, it's not like they're unaware that, wait, he's 34? You know, it's not. Well, he's not yet, but he will be this summer. I don't think that's a mystery to anyone. And there has been decline. What he did in games 1 and 4 against Boston when he was so sensational, we saw him do that for weeks at a time, right? That's what he did here. That was what was so unbelievable. Nobody ever averaged 36 the way he did.
I don't know if we know how much he's declined. That's what I maintained the last couple of years. I don't know if I don't know if we're ever gonna know until if he actually changes teams. I think that's the way we'll know for sure. When he gets a bump up in usage, one if he's ever the guy again, whatever team he decides to go to, which I don't think I don't think it's gonna be anywhere but Philly or Houston. Basically, if he comes to Houston, that's the only way we'll know if there's been a decline. Is what I'm saying.
Well, what if they trade Chris Paul for him? Chris Paul in a first round pick.
Well, I don't understand the Chris Paul interest, and not only like from like.
No, I'm talking about to Philly.
Okay.
If they think he's leaving anyway, oh no, we can't keep him. Now, it would also mean James would have to opt into his contract that is already at a discount. So that's a pretty huge if right there.
Yeah.
But you know what it's kind of a little bit like? And again, this is a very Houston perspective, but we saw Chris Paul came to play with James Harden. And for a year, they were sensational together. Chris Paul played off of Harden for a year. He was a catch-and-shoot guy when Harden was on the court, and then he was Chris Paul when Harden sat, and they staggered them. The next year, you know, he wanted to be Chris Paul again. And so at the end of that year, there was a feeling of, all right, we're going to change this. Russell Westbrook comes here, and they never really were great at the same time. Harden was great until the first week of January. Westbrook was great from roughly Christmas till when the league stopped, you know, for COVID. But they were never great at the same time. And they both decided, you know what, I want to be Russell Westbrook. I want to be James Harden. I want to be me. I think that's a little bit of what James is feeling now. That I was willing, it's Joel's team, and Joel requires that. That's important to him. It's his team, and James was good with that. Now, if I go back to Houston, can I be James again? Okay, do the Rockets want him to be James? You know, Rockets James. Do you want him coming in and dominating the ball to that level? How does that impact Jalen Green's reaching of that ceiling we talked about? How does that fit with Alpi? Where, okay, he could probably play with Alpi. He was able to play with Joel Embiid, but he deferred to Joel Embiid. Is he going to defer to Alperen Şengün? You know, and so there are things they have to think about and maybe have to find out about that. I'm just speculating. They need to know a whole lot more than speculation.
I always maintain if these are the guys that you guys think they are, they should be fine, right? Like if they are as talented as you guys think he is, where you guys drafted him, obviously you guys think they're really talented. Playing with great players shouldn't take away from being great yourself.
But it does. We saw it happen with the Lakers in the first half of this year.
But it doesn't take away effectiveness. You're still good, right? You're still a good player, right? Like I think like Harden was less statistically great last year, but he was still very effective. And I say the same thing about
he's a freaking genius.
Yeah.
You know, he's an offensive genius. The guy is a savant.
Right.
But he doesn't look like he did here. You know, he doesn't move. He does, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, he is just a freak of understanding the game.
So do you get the sense that a 4-year deal is just out of the question?
I don't know. Again, I think it probably is, yeah.
Okay.
But I don't know. Since, again, that's where you start to be, oh my gosh, you're going to be paying him more than $50 million when he's 38?
Oof. 37, I think.
He'd start the year, I guess, from 37 to 38.
Yeah. And
you're right.
Yeah, I mean, but what I would say is, yeah. Like, if there's no horrible injury, right? What evidence am I supposed to believe that James Harden's not going to be worth that age 37 season, right? Like, he can shoot, he can play make. These skills should age well, in my opinion, right? I've seen players with these skill sets be fine when they're 37. Maybe they're not worth the entire, like, but if they're worth 80%, 90%, you're not looking to dump these guys. I don't know. That's just my perspective. I don't want to get too off.
Well, here's the other, you know, I'm sure there's more things to get to, but the other part of it is you won 22 games last year and maybe the best free agent in the league wants to play for you. What are you talking about? Forget the conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, you get the best guy in the league. Mm-hmm. That's a free agent. It's, mm-hmm. you know, you can argue somebody else, Kyrie or somebody, but come on, you know, 22 win season and you can get that guy. Yeah, so there's a strong case to be made both ways. And the comparison then becomes, okay, but, you know, let's say you get James and you're a 37-42 win team, and that's unbelievable jump. Couldn't you make that jump with three really good 28-32 minutes a game guys?
I don't know. I don't know. Like, if the coaching was that bad last year, I would say that then yes. But if you were a reasonably coached team, which I'm not saying they were, if that's what you were last year, and you added a couple role players, I don't know if they give you a 15-20 win jump. It's very hard to do that. But maybe the player development gets you there. You know, maybe a year forward of Jalen Green gets you there. Maybe Alperen Şengün, you know, third season gets you there. I don't know. It's tough to know. It's tough to know, especially if we don't know which guys they actually sign in that alternate universe. So, that's interesting. I just think there's a reasonable case that, you know, that you just laid out, that the most efficient use of cap space is always going to be James. Like someone like a star like James, excuse me, right? Like the most efficient in terms of you're trying to get the most dollar for dollar of your cap space, at least this summer, maybe not long term, but this summer, it's probably James Harden. Now, long term, I think there's a reasonable, you know, you can reasonably disagree with that, you know, with the
I'll give you another one then. I'm devil's advocating all over the place here, but you're a terrible defensive team last year. You're going to get better by adding James Harden. And this is James now because
they were that bad. Like they were that bad.
No, James last year cannot stay in front of people. He just doesn't. And he doesn't have the advantage he had when he was here, which was he was not just better defensively against post-ups. He was really, really good. When the Rockets would switch, they'd try and post him up. He was tremendous. So he wasn't just James is bad at defense, James. No, he was really, really good. Well, nobody posts up anymore. He doesn't get to do what he does best defensively. So now everybody wants to pick a matchup, ISO, and beat you off the dribble. That's the way the game has changed in the short time since he left. And he didn't stay in front of people.
Yeah, I'm only half kidding about that. I'm just saying, like, I don't know if they can get any worse. So I'm saying, I'm not sure if he's going to hurt.
No, that's probably fair.
Yeah, like, I think you look at what Houston gains offensively, it's enough to make the defense, you can overlook it a little bit. I'm not saying overlook it forever. Eventually, you're going to have to address it. But, you know, the way these things work is you have to get good at one side of the ball at least first, and then you plug in the holes. Right, all these teams, they go in stages. They don't just go, oh, we're going to get good at defense and offense at the same time. That's the ideal way. Ideally, you like to do both. But most of the time, it's like, okay, we're going to be an elite offensive team, then we'll plug in the holes. We're going to be an elite defensive team, then we'll get the guys offensively to help us get over the top. It's usually one or the other, and that's fine. I don't know. I don't want to turn this into a James Harden conversation. Like, I just wanted to get your perspective on like the fourth year, because I think that is interesting what they'd be willing to do. And I don't know what James wants. You know, I don't know if he still wants to win a title anymore. I don't know if he views Houston as like, you know, his natural retirement home. Right. I don't know.
That's absolutely true. James would love to be back.
Right.
Whether he'd also be happy to be in Philly with a better contract or the same contract, that's legitimate question, but you know, this is home for a lot of reasons that have nothing to do with basketball.
If I were to if I were to put you on the spot, what do you think happens?
I don't think he's going to be here.
You don't think
he's
going to be
here? Less than 50%.
Hmm. Okay.
Not by much. I think there's a few reasons. I don't think.
Fair enough.
And you know, but like I said, I've also been the one saying, I don't think they can resist. If he says yes, I don't think they can resist. So even if they feel like, I don't know. Now, maybe there's, like, who's the next best player they can get? Or better put, who, if you say three guys and you could put them together just the way you want, you know, if you, I don't know if they've got them, right? Like, if you ask me right now, who's the most likely free agent, if not James? I'd probably say Dylan Brooks.
Okay.
Okay, is Dylan Brooks enough to make you resist the chance to... No. And you can make a case. Dylan Brooks might be... He's in the very, very small club of best perimeter defensive player in the league. He's that good defensively. In the, maybe not the best, but he's in that group. He shot 32% on threes last year. You know, he had a few years, 35, 37%, but it's been in decline since then. Maybe some bet. He also shot it way more often than he ever had.
But notable that the Rockets have made some additions to their coaching staff these past couple weeks. Just some names I thought were interesting in terms of the shooting, especially considering where they're drafting. But yeah, you're right. That is a concern. Sorry.
What if it's Cam Johnson? Does that make you say, ah, you know what, James, we're good? And keep in mind, Cam Johnson is okay. He's pretty good defensively. He's not Mikal Bridges. For some reason, people kind of equate them. No. Mikal Bridges is in that club that I mentioned that Dylan Brooks might be a member. Mikal Bridges is in there. You know, he's welcoming the next guy in. Cam Johnson's not bad defensively, but he's not that. But if you got that, does that make you resist?
Well, then I think you kind of run into the same problem that you run in with James, right? Like the contract number, right? Because I think it's going to take a lot to get Cam Johnson out of Brooklyn.
But you don't mind the years. It's more the number.
Right. Well, I mean, money. Yeah, it might be the year. It might be the years, right? The fourth year might get ugly. We won't know that until we see whatever the number is going to be. I feel like you, if at that point, I'd still take Harden. I'd still, again, like I maintain the most efficient use of space that the Rockets could possibly, like, spend $45 million better than James Harden. If you can do that, you're much better at talent evaluation than anybody I've ever met.
That's tough. You're right. You start throwing these names out there, and they're solid role players.
Right.
But like you said, it's just, you get, we got Dante DiVincenzo, Jordan Clarkson. People like Jordan Clarkson a lot, more than, you know, as a guy, as a true pro. Gary Trent Jr. made a lot of money last year. He's going to make even more, and he's kind of one-dimensional.
There's one guy I really like, I think would be perfect, and he just opted out. It just came out that he's going to opt out today. Fred VanVleet would be perfect. I don't know if it's going to happen. I don't know what Fred VanVleet's looking for. I imagine he's looking for money. That's a big part of his equation. And
probably to win, too.
Yeah, probably.
I would like that because he's certainly a whole lot younger. There's a lot of mileage in a relatively short amount of time.
Yeah.
He's played the second most minutes in the league the last 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
He might not age well either because he doesn't have the athleticism that, you know, he can't lose anything.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is, if you get three guys, it would make sense if they're at different positions. So, okay, who's a center that you're willing to spend money on? Besides, I mean, Brook Lopez is...
Not Brook Lopez.
I would. I would in a heartbeat.
At this age? I mean, if you're worried about eight...
You're not going to shrink.
What's the contract length?
Well, that's the thing, is if you could do it for two or three, you can't go beyond three, and probably be better if you could do it for two.
Yeah.
But he made $14 million last year, so you're going to have to bump him up.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm very sure in the next year or two he'll still be tall. You know, that's not going to change. He's coming off an unbelievably good year.
Yeah.
And if you cut down his minutes so that you could play Alpi in the matchups that are good for him, and play him and increase his minutes in those matchups, Lopez is okay with that. That'll work with him. You know, so it's not like, hey, if you spend everything it would take to get Cam Johnson, you're playing Cam Johnson.
Yeah.
You know, with Lopez, you can make that work. I didn't have in the story, because actually I wrote the story about 6 days ago, and I've had a lot of calls of returned. If you were to get a center of Jakob Poeltl, who I think is now more available than people thought, he was always thought to be, Toronto's keeping him. I think he might be available. Dwight Powell, again, a guy you could play when it's right, and you could maybe have him, like Kevon Looney plays for Golden State, where some nights you don't win because if you don't have him, other nights he barely plays at all. Again, that doesn't make you think, well, we can't sign James. We can get Dwight Powell. But these are the kind of names that if you're getting a group of guys, you know, for wings, I mentioned Dylan Brooks, DiVincenzo, Clarkson. Grant Williams isn't really a wing. I think he gives you some of what they could really use.
Thought you were going somewhere else. Yeah.
And I like Kelly Oubre.
Oh, okay. That's still not the guy. I thought you were going Middleton. Yeah, that's interesting. Like, see, if Middleton's actually available, which I'm not sure if he, again, like, he's kind of like Fred VanVleet, and I'm not sure what he wants. I'm not sure what Milwaukee would offer to retain.
Add one more not sure.
Huh?
Add one more thing to not be sure about.
Yeah, yeah. That's going to be tough. And
for people who haven't read our minds, that knee.
I'm sorry?
The knee.
I guess
his knee.
Oh, his knee. Oh, his knee.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, is it troublesome? Is it something? It's something you really better look into.
Yeah. And yeah. I suppose.
Otherwise, sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a really good defensive player who's a tremendous shooter.
Yeah.
He's not that old.
Fits a lot of
knee. That knee is scary.
Yeah. It is, especially like when it's a guy who wasn't that highly touted to begin with, right in the beginning, coming into his career, like the aging process can be rough after an injury like that, right? Because they don't have, as you mentioned, kind of with Fred VanVleet, the athleticism, right? To carry you.
Although with him, you know, he has good positional size.
Yes. Yeah. Great. So, I say, the size might be a reason, but, you know,
okay. What about one of the finals guys? Like Bruce Brown, Max Strus, Gabe Vincent.
These are nice guys. And, like, if the Rockets sign, like, you know, a few of these guys on relatively reasonable deals, obviously it'd be a good summer. I'm not sure if it'd be a great summer. And I wonder what a reasonable deal looks like this summer when a lot of teams have space and there are no stars, right? There's, like, two stars. And I wonder if that leads to these role players that we're talking about getting overpaid. And if Houston's one of these teams that does the overpaying, I'd feel a little queasy about what kind of offseason they're going to have. But we'll see. I mean, it's possible that they don't use all their money, right? There's also like a middle ground there. You could sign like one or two guys and keep – and kick the can down the road on the rest of your space. I don't know. What's the... You think
they can't resist. All the way. Going back to the can't resist theory.
Okay.
They're a kid with an allowance that's barely burning a hole in the pocket. They've suffered. They've lost so much.
That's scary.
They're spending their money.
That doesn't make me feel good. You don't want them to have the Portland 2016 summer. You don't want them to have that.
No, I don't think it would be that so much as... Because you can get multiple guys. You can do it with a group. None of these guys I'm talking about, with all those people I listed, nobody's getting max money. It's like, you gave him max? You know? And so I don't think it's, you know, and there's other guys that we haven't even mentioned yet. You know what else, before we run out of time? It's maybe more of a long shot, but the make a trade, there's going to be teams that have to move players' contracts because they're afraid of getting into that new second apron and getting handcuffed. If Miami wants to keep Strus and Gabe Vincent, do they move Duncan Robinson? Do they move Tyler Hero? Duncan Robinson, you know, he's a guy who's actually improved in the playoffs, not just because shots going or not going, but he's actually played better. But defensively, I don't know. Not with that contract. Hero would be very interesting. Do they do that kind of thing? And there's others where, because Atlanta, have to move somebody so that they don't get their money all the way up to where they're handcuffed. Those things don't happen as much, and they're very unpredictable. But and there are teams that will let you park contracts if you give us an asset. Oklahoma City would do it. San Antonio would do it. You give us an asset, you can use some of our cap space to move your contract. But would the Rockets get a player they actually want from a team that has to move some money?
How badly does Darryl want to move Tobias Harris or something? You know, I get what you're saying. And maybe,
I'd like Tobias Harris for them.
Yeah, and maybe some of this comes back with the second apron. Maybe teams are more willing to do those deals now that, you know, the second apron's in place and there's a lot of restrictions in adding players. So maybe there are more dumps like that. But that actually really, really interests me. If the Rockets could do a deal like that for Tobias Harris and get an asset out of it, like that's something that I would consider, especially if you can't get like Harden, if you can't. By the way, I do have two more questions before we leave, like two more, and I promise we're going to get out of here. Is this Kyrie stuff real? Because I read this Mark Stein thing. I'll read the quote from his newsletter. The Mavericks remain the league's only known team with definitive interest in signing the Mercurial Irving next month. But league sources say that the Rockets have been increasingly excited as a team that could join the bidding war if Harden elects to stay with the 76ers. How real is that?
I don't think it's very real, especially, you know, have been cited by whom? He didn't word it, the Rockets are kicking the tires, or the Rockets are discussing. He didn't say that. He said the Rockets have been cited as a team that could. I think he answered your question better than I am. But no, I've never heard that name kicked around.
Thank God.
To that. I haven't heard that at all. Plus,
he'd make your job a lot more interesting, you know?
Okay.
That's true, right?
I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
I got Dylan Brooks for that.
Yeah, you got him. You got him.
But yeah, it could be very interesting because if nothing else, all of these names, a lot of them I'm sure people will hear or read Sunday, didn't get excited about, but they'll be interesting. You know, the Rockets desperately need veterans who know how to play. You know, guys who, you know, you look at Denver, and it's not just that they're so great, and they've got a guy who might be the best player in the league right now, and he's playing at an incredible level, and all the things that we could list. They know what they're doing. They come out and they execute, they run their stuff. They're defensively, they recognize everything. Miami's been that way forever. You know, the Rockets, I always said to Stephen Silas, I'm amazed at the poker face you have during games, where I thought he would be slapping his forehead so often he'd have a concussion. If it was me, I would, because they don't recognize anything. Everything's new to them. So defensively, they were constantly reacting, and then you're too late. You can't. They were the guy running a track meet, and where everybody else takes off at the gun, they take off when everybody else is off, when they saw everybody else go. They need guys who, and so if you're not excited about these names, guys who know how to play, who've been there, done that, seen it all. Jeff Green, when he got to the Rockets, I've said that example. I'm not saying the Rockets need Jeff Green or even his position. They don't. But when he got here, he went through one practice, and it wasn't a hard one, and a shoot-around. He was like, okay, I got it. Let's run it. Yeah. You know, he could get driving out-of-bounds plays as well as the players on the tape. They need guys like that.
Yeah, yeah. Mike D'Antoni makes it very easy for those guys to just come in. And I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm doing.
They ran coverages. They ran out-of-bounds plays.
Oh, yeah.
We ran that. Of course, he'd been on it. Half the teams in the league. But, you know, a guy like that comes in and says, yeah, I ran that for 2 years here. Oh, yeah, that's the same thing Golden State runs, right? Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't have that.
Oh, no, I'm not – to be clear, that was a compliment to Mike D'Antoni. Mike D'Antoni is, like, really good at implementing role players, like, on the fly like that. He did that year after year after year, Gerald Green, Jeff Green, like, whoever you want to list. Okay. Last question, because we both want to go watch this finals game. The Ime Udoka, It's kind of a two-parter. I'm cheating a little bit. How did this happen so fast, the hire? Like, this was the quickest hire they've ever had. And what role does he have in this process, if any? Does he have any role?
Yeah, he has a big role in the process. You know, lots of influence. He and Rafael are talking a lot. So they both totally know how the other feels, their opinions, their tastes. Basically, everything we've just done for the last 45 minutes, they're doing all, constantly, again and again, you know. So I don't know. Like, it's still Rafael. It's on Rafael, you know. I think he said that somewhere. Maybe at that, I don't know. I think there's a quote from Rafael where he said, yeah, I think I didn't use it in the story, but he said it at the Freedmanstown event where, look, the decisions that we make are on me, but we're talking. And I've heard they talk a lot. How did it happen so fast? Well, don't forget, they were doing their research. They didn't wait until after the season to start doing research.
Yeah.
So the looking into people and getting a feeling for how they feel from what you can do, there's a lot you can't do, but what they could do, of course they did. And they were totally, the references, the people they talked to, and I will say the people I've talked to since the hire, the praise is off the charts. Like, wow. You know, guys who have no reason. He's already got the job. They have no reason to say to me the kinds of things I was hearing. Even Friday, I talked to somebody that I respect. And so they heard all that. And then when they did the meetings, it was like, okay, he's the guy. It's like when Leslie Alexander wanted D'Antoni. And Darryl convinced him, well, let's take this opportunity. We'll talk to a lot of young guys. And we'll get to know them and see what you think then. It was never going to be anybody but D'Antoni. It was him. That was it. The Rockets recognized that in themselves, that, hey, we're giving him the job. So let's just do it. Let's go ahead and finish it up. It wasn't so much about, ooh, let's get him before the Raptors do. It was, no, he's the guy. Yeah. We know it. We might as well do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and the Raptors took their time with their process, and you know, they finally made their hire, but like I definitely thought that was a factor, and I'm less and less think like, I think it was just like Houston's like, okay, after Kelly Eco did a great story on this, like after that second interview with Ime, it felt like they felt very, very comfortable with what they had.
Yeah, absolutely. That they knew of themselves.
Right.
All right. We know what we're going to do. Why shouldn't we just do it?
Right. Thank you so much for coming on and you know, missing 10 minutes of this finals for me. So please, everybody listen to this podcast, go read all the stuff I plugged from Jonathan in this podcast, you know, the article about the free agency, the article.
Go back and read the Amen Thompson one.
And the Amen Thompson one too. Yes.
That one was to make you feel better about being fourth instead of second.
You shouldn't feel bad about it. I like Amen a lot. Like, it's a gamble I like for Houston. But yeah, please go read Jonathan's work on at the Chronicle. And where can we follow you on social media, Jonathan?
Twitter. I have a Facebook work one, which I hope my stories still automatically go to. But I tweet all the links at Jonathan_Fagan on Twitter. No more automated tweets. Sorry about that. They used to be automated. Now I do it myself. But so Jonathan_Fagan, and all the links go right there.
Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for asking.
Of course.